Well, brethren, we are knee-deep in final preparations for the Feast of Tabernacles. We no doubt are going through our feast plans. We are staring at that laundry pile that has to be done. We are packing clothes. We are perhaps even making a list of the things that we want to do at the feast site that we intend to go to. We might have even gone to the particular feast site, an area there, and taken a look at maybe some of the places that we want to eat. I know I've done that in Spokane. I've identified a couple of places that serve very good cooked cow that I intend to go to. I'm hoping that my mother and my wife will come with me, but if they don't, that's their business. I'm just going to go anyways by myself. And so we will head to the Feast of Tabernacles when we will rehearse the glorious time, picturing the millennium and, of course, that last great day that will occur. When we travel, regardless of whether it is we are going to our local site here in Spokane or traveling to Hawaii or Florida or one of the other sites around the world, wherever it may be, we know that travel always has its challenges. On more than one occasion, we can find ourselves having been at the Feast of Tabernacles, and we're on our way back, and we suddenly say, I forgot something. I left something in the hotel, or I left something in the condo. I left something in the house that we were renting. You know, ever since I've been a feast coordinator, I'm always amazed because we always have a lost and found container of all the lost and found items that come in through the course of the feast. And usually on the last day, well, generally a few days prior to that, but on the last day, I give everybody one last opportunity. Please, if you've lost something, check the lost and found bucket or the lost and found container, because at the end of services, again, we will take all that is lost and we will give it to Goodwill. Of course, I say after I've surveyed it, determine if there's anything that I want. You'd be surprised at what some people lose and they just simply don't claim. But there's also a time where sometimes we may purposely leave something behind at the Feast of Tabernacles. Back in 2014, when my wife and I went to Malawi for half the feast and then to Zimbabwe, that second half when we spent in Zimbabwe, I had purposely traveled rather light. I had only brought two suits with me. They were a couple of my older suits. They were kind of at the point where I was going to take them out of the rotation because I had some other suits that my wife had convinced me to buy. And so I said to the elder there in Zimbabwe, I said, I'm leaving these suits with you. Please give them to anybody here that is in need that can use them. Here was a case in which I didn't necessarily forget something at the feast, but I did leave it at the feast, but I purposely left it behind. Now, as we again talk about this message this afternoon, I want us to keep in mind of something that regardless of how careful we are, we are all going to leave something at the Feast of Tabernacles this year. Wherever you go, we're going to leave something at the Feast of Tabernacles. We are all going to leave an impression. Now, that impression that we leave at the feast is going to be to both those that are outside of the church and those that are inside the church. With that in mind, I'd like to ask a question this afternoon and hopefully answer it. What will we leave at the feast this year? What will we leave at the feast this year? Let's begin for a moment about the impression that will we leave to those outside of the church. You know, we can go back through the history of the church, and again, I speak to the history of my time in the church. But just even in recent time, in recent years, the experiences of impressions that have come back to me from individuals that were outside of the church. Last year in Victoria, there's a chain of coffee shops up in Canada referred to as Tim Hortons. For those that grew up in Canada or know anything about Canada, Canadians do not refer to it as Tim Hortons, it's referred to as Timmy's. You can go get a cup of coffee there. You can get a donut there. They have some wonderful donuts there, some fantastic donuts. They have other food as well, but this is a chain that exists there in Canada. In Victoria, where we kept the feast last year, there was an assistant manager that had gone to one of the employees of the Mary Winspear Center where we kept the feast in Victoria again last year and back in 2016. And the assistant manager asked the individual, the employee at the Mary Winspear Center, he said, "Who do you have at the center right now this week?" And the individual said, "Well, we've got this church group in there. They're here for 8 days." And the assistant manager of the Tim Hortons said, "Those are some of the nicest people I have ever met. And some of them are from Texas." Well, again, apart from that, you know, grateful that the people from Texas left a positive impression, but here was an individual who said, "These are some of the nicest people I have ever met." An impression was left upon this assistant manager. A few weeks ago, when I was down in Tucson and looking at the possibility of using Tucson as a future Feast of Tabernacles site, I ran into individuals that remembered the church going back to the Worldwide Church of God days back in the 70s and into the 80s when we kept the feast there. I remember as I was leaving this particular hotel that had hosted me for an evening and had taken me on a tour of their facility, the bellhop, who had to be in his 70s, I have to believe he's in his 70s. If he's not, he's not aged well. I'll just simply say that. But he says, "Yeah, I remember your group back in the 70s. He said, "Reverend Herbert was your leader, right?" And I said, "Well, you mean Mr. Armstrong?" And yeah, Mr. Armstrong. He said, "I remember you back in the 70s. You had some of the nicest people I've ever met before. And really, really well-behaved kids." Now, think about that for a moment. Here was an individual in 2019 who was talking about an event that took place some 40-plus years ago. And yet the impression was so strong in his mind, 40 years later, he still remembered that Reverend Herbert's people were really nice people and had really well-behaved kids. That was a strong impression. It was a very strong impression. You also have the other side of the coin, and that's the bad impression. Last year, my wife and I, along with my mother and father, rented a house in Victoria. And we had, again, contacted this individual online. And from the time we started to, again, get into the paperwork and signing everything, he wanted to know the names of everybody that was going to be staying there. He wanted to know the ages of everybody that was going to be staying there. He wanted to know if we were going to be having any parties there at the house. And I thought, well, no, maybe in my younger days, but I'm not exactly a party animal anymore. I think a party for me is staying up past 10 o'clock anytime now. But then he proceeded to tell me about the fact that in 2016, the last year we had had the feast in Victoria, that somebody had rented that house and they were having get-togethers every night. They had a bunch of people. They were parking their cars where they shouldn't have parked. They were having loud parties that went on past midnight, sometimes 1 a.m. And again, you're in the neighborhood there. And the neighbors were complaining to the owner of the house. He's dealing with this whole situation. My point being is that it left a bad impression on the manager of the house. Now, I'm hoping that by our staying there, we left a good impression. I think we did because he says, "You're welcome back anytime." So I'm assuming that was a good impression. But my point in all of this is that we are leaving an impression on everybody that we come in contact with outside of the church. Turn with me over to Matthew chapter 5. Mr. Storrs and I were very well connected because my wife, as we were singing that last song, said, "This is perfect for your sermon." Of course, she heard it this morning, so she would know, right? So we were in tune, Mr. Storrs. You and I, we're in tune. We're one-on-one there. First time for everything, right? Yeah, okay. Matthew chapter 5, notice beginning in verse 13, he says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing to be thrown down, trampled underfoot by men." Verse 14, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden." Whether you want to or not, whether we want to or not, wherever we intend to be at sundown, Sunday evening, a week from tomorrow, we are going to be a light to a bunch of people in that community that we come in contact with. Now, in certain cases, they will have seen, if it's like, for example, Orange Beach, Alabama, oh yeah, that's that church that comes in every fall. We like them because they leave all their money here. In the case of Spokane, they're going to go, well, who are these people? We don't know. They haven't been here. They might hearken back to the 80s or the 70s when the church did have a feast in Spokane. But whether you want to or not, we are all going to be a light to the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Verse 15, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. We don't have the ability to go to wherever we're going for the feast, put a big lampshade or put a big blanket over our head. I don't want to be seen by anybody. That way, if I don't have to worry about leaving a bad impression, if I just don't ever have to look at anybody, if I don't have to interact with anybody, well, I don't know how you're going to be able to do that. Because even if you never went to a restaurant the entire time you're there, you're going to have to go to the grocery store and buy food. Unless you're going to go through a seven-day fast, I don't think that that's going to happen and occur. Because one of the elements of the Feast of Tabernacles is eating and drinking and rejoicing. Eat the fat, drink the sweet, right? So we come back to realize that there's something here that we must come back and understand. Regardless of where we are going to have to let our light shine. Verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify you. No, that's not what it says. It says, and glorify your Father in heaven. So when we go to the feast and when we give this impression, we, in essence, are showing the relationship that we have with God the Father and the work that we are in His hands and the example that we are as a very positive influence, a very positive person. Every action will cause a reaction at this feast. It may be a bad meal. It may be bad service. It could be poor accommodations. You may be attending a site that you have never attended before, and it doesn't meet your expectations. Now, again, in certain respects, you're going to a feast site that maybe you've been to before, and so, yes, we know it, we understand it, we realize it. Year after year, you go to the same site. But you may be going to a feast site where it doesn't necessarily meet your expectations. What is our reaction going to be? What's the reaction going to be when we check in at wherever we're staying? What's the reaction going to be when we ask for medium rare and it comes back medium well? What's the reaction going to be when they misplace and they give us bacon in the morning rather than the turkey sausage we've asked for? I didn't order this. Get this out of here. What is the reaction? My point is, for every action, there is going to be a reaction. And so we are going to have the ability to give an impression to every single person that we come in contact with. Someone where you're staying, someone at a restaurant that you're eating at, a store or shop that you're going in to shop at, whatever it might be, there is going to be an impression, and it's going to stick with them. Now, we all would define ourselves, I hope, as Christians, those who walk or follow and walk in the teachings of Jesus Christ. That is the definition of a Christian, those who follow Christ. Will those outside the church see that? Will they see that impression? Will they look at that and go, oh, those are those people that are part of the Church of God, a worldwide association. Those are those nice people with well-behaved kids. Those were, again, the impressions, as I mentioned before, that some people that remembered back from our years in Tucson. Notice over in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, the important thing to understand here is, are they going to see the glory of God in each one of us by the impression that we leave? And is that going to be a positive impression? 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 20. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and notice verse 20. This is, again, one scripture that Paul speaks to this whole understanding of being an ambassador for Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 20. He says, now then, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us. We implore you, on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. Now, let's understand something. An ambassador lives in a foreign land. We are going to the Feast of Tabernacles. Wherever that site may be on the face of the earth, we are going to a foreign land because, well, we might have a physical citizenship to this country or to another country. Our actual spiritual citizenship is what? Paul said it is in heaven. So as an ambassador, we don't necessarily live the dictates of the foreign land that we are in. We live according to the laws and the dictates of the country that we represent. That being the spiritual country, the spiritual homeland that we long for, we wait for, that we are representing. And we represent that country, as every ambassador does, in a positive light. So we ask the question here, will our interactions with people outside the church present our country, the body of Christ, in a positive light? Now, think about it for a moment. Will people come in contact with us outside the church, and will they want to know more about the church, or will they want to know less about the church? When we interact with someone, will they simply say, well, when are you leaving? Or when they're in contact with us, will they say, so tell me a little bit about your church. Where do you meet? Where do you have churches around the United States? This is, again, the conversation that may take place. And it may all come as an end result of this interaction and the impression that we leave as an ambassador of Christ. Notice over in Proverbs chapter 13. Interesting scripture that I came to as I was doing some study for this particular sermon. An interesting proverb. Proverbs chapter 13. I find it rather interesting. In light of this whole understanding of being an ambassador, and will a person be better off for having come in contact with us at the feast, with the impression that we leave with them? Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 17. He says, A wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings health. Now think about that for a moment. A wicked messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful ambassador brings health. We want to think about the standpoint of being a positive, the positive aspects of being an ambassador of Christ. And by doing so, we make that person feel better at that particular moment in time of interaction. They're grateful for having come in contact with us. They're grateful that we have gone to their establishment. We're grateful that they've been able to serve us. Or they're grateful that they've been able to serve us. We come back to a realization, again, of being positive, of being healthy to the person that we're with. Now, let's take a look at another scripture here. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5. Colossians chapter 4, verse 5, the Apostle Paul says, walk in wisdom towards those who are outside, redeeming the time. Now walking in wisdom. At any given time, again, we have an opportunity, as I've already said, to interact with individuals. And sometimes people are going to ask us the question, well, what are you guys doing in Spokane? What are you doing here in Hawaii? What are you doing in Orange Beach, Alabama? How do we answer an individual of why we are there? Again, this whole standpoint of walking in wisdom towards those who are outside. How do we answer somebody? You know, the whole concept of being ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within you also comes back to having wisdom, as the Apostle Paul said here, to know how to answer the individual and in what fashion, in what way we answer that individual. Sometimes people will believe that someone is interested in the church when they're not really interested in the church. Years ago, pastoring, and I had an individual came to me, and this was while we were in Utah and I was pastoring in Salt Lake. And I was talking to a member, and he said, Mr. Pinelli, he says, I think my coworker might be being called by God. And I said, really? I said, can you tell me why you feel that way? Well, he's asking me all these questions about the church. He's asking me all these questions about my religion and blah, blah, go on and on and on. It's okay. I said, tell me a little bit about your interaction. When does it take place? Where does it take place, and how does it take place? Give me some more details. He says, well, we get to the company we work for, we get in our service truck, and then we drive an hour to the service site that we're at that we have to work at. I said, okay, do you guys listen to races? No, he says, he just wants to talk religion. I said, all right, when you ask him something, does he give you a yeah, but, or is he saying, well, that's interesting, tell me more? And he's had to think about it for a moment. He says, well, come to think of it, he likes to debate quite a bit. And I said, he's killing time for an hour while you're going to the work site. God, I'm sorry, I don't think he's calling him right now. My point was here, you have to walk in wisdom towards knowing those who are outside and knowing how to respond to somebody. Understanding how to respond to somebody who asks, well, why are you here? What are you guys doing here? We have that opportunity. You know, it's not the time to say we're here picturing the millennial reign of Jesus Christ when we will be kings and priests with Jesus Christ, when those who do not repent and do not overcome and are not part of God's plan are thrust into the lake of fire and will no longer exist. Oh, well, have a good time. There's a little bit of wisdom that goes into how we respond to somebody, how we answer somebody. So my point here is we leave an impression. We leave an impression with every interaction that we are going to have at the feast. We're going to be leaving that with those people. Are they going to feel better for having come in contact with us at the church or as a member of the church? Are they going to want to know more about the church? Or are they going to know less about the church? They might be indifferent one way or the other. Hopefully, it's not a situation where, tell me less about the church. I don't want to know anything about you. We have to understand that that could be the impression we leave. We want to leave a positive impression to those outside the church. Now let's talk about impressions inside the church. Because again, we're dealing with two groups of individuals. We're dealing with those who know nothing about what we do, but we're also dealing with all of us that are coming together, that are all part of God's family, that do know why we're there. There's two points in that regard that I want to bring up. The first is going to be what I refer to as conduct and conversation. Now, let's understand something here for a moment. We are all not yellow pencils in the Church of God. I get that. I understand that. There are a number of different personality tests that exist out there on the market today. My wife and I, probably back about 12 years ago when we went through pastoral training, we did what was referred to as the Myers-Briggs personality test. Now, they basically lump personalities into four color-coded categories, one being red, one blue, one white, one yellow. Now, I'll give you the overview of what those are. The red individual is a type A personality. He or she is the type of person that gets something done. They'll drive right over the top of anybody that gets in their way. They won't see anybody. They have a mission, and they're going to complete the mission. That is a red type personality. Now, the blue type personality is an individual who also tends to be organized. They tend to get things done, but along the way, they will not run over somebody. They will kind of deal with them, hi, how are you, and step around them to get whatever they need to get done. The white type personality is the one that comes in between the reds and the blues to try and solve everything. They're the peacemaker, right? They're the ones, oh, can't we all just get along? Can't we just all get along? The whites are the peacemakers. And their personality type is a peacemaker. And then there's the yellow that says, let's get some chips and sangria and let's just have a good time and party all the time. That's the yellow, right? Now, there's variations. Understand there's variations of that. Some are like blue, red, red, blue. I'm not going to tell you what I am. I'm not going to tell you what my wife are. You can go through the test yourself. You've probably already figured out a little bit of what I am based upon 5 years here. My point being here is that when we get to the feast, wherever you're at, you're going to meet personality types that are red, that are blue, that are white, and that are yellow. They're not all yellow pencils. If I have learned anything in my time in the church, and especially in the last 25 years since we left the Worldwide Church of God, I have realized that not everyone thinks the way I do. Now, some would say that's a good thing. But I come to realize that not everybody thinks the same way I do. I also realize that when I am at the feast, I must temper my words and my conversation in terms of who I might be talking to. I understand and realize that I might be dealing with certain people at the Feast of Tabernacles that are not part of my fellowship. I also understand and realize that I might be dealing with a personality that is rather sensitive. You know, you really have two types of personalities on one end of the spectrum. You have the spectrum of an individual that gets knocked over with a feather. Their personality type is if you just say something very mild manner, oh, you upset me. And then you get the other person that you can hit with a 2x4 and say, oh, did something happen? So there's two different spectrums of personality and everything in between. So we understand in terms of our speech and dealing with people that we have to understand that we're dealing with all these different temperaments and all these different things that are happening. Let's go over to Luke chapter 6. The whole concept of understanding what we say, when we say it, and how we say it. Luke chapter 6. And verse 45. Luke chapter 6 and verse 45. We jump in the middle of a thought here that Jesus Christ is speaking. Luke chapter 6, verse 45, he says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. Somebody will say, well, I can't help it. That's just the way I am. Well, we must be on guard. We must carefully understand that everything that we say, people will get an impression of us. If we go to the feast and we ridicule this, that, or the other thing, people will get an impression of us. We must come back and understand that that which sits in our heart must be guarded because, as he said there, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. I've had people through the years that tell me, well, I didn't mean that. I said it, but I didn't mean that. Well, why do you keep saying it? Why do you keep saying it? If you keep saying it, obviously it's sitting deep down inside. So there's a problem in the life spring or the life well of what you're saying. So we have to think about that, right? So my point here is that this impression to those inside the church, coming in contact with individuals that we may never have met before, we need to put a guard on our heart, because out of the heart is going to come what our mouth speaks. Notice Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. Earlier we read Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5 in reference to walking in wisdom with those that are outside. But now let's talk about, again, talking about dealing with individuals within the church. Colossians chapter 4 and notice verse 6. He says, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt. Not pepper, not cayenne pepper, seasoned with salt. So there's a sense there that what we say is seasoned and given in such a way that it's savory. The individual is willing to take it and able to take it, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Remember what I said before? You can deal with somebody very boldly and abruptly in some cases, and they don't have a problem with it. Other people, very, very sensitive, knocked over with a feather. You have to be very, very careful with them. Our speech and our conversation with one another is extremely important. As it is at the Feast of Tabernacles, we ask the question, will it be centered on the timely events that we're dealing with, or will it be consumed with some other thing? What will we be in conversation with other members of the family of God about? We need to think about that. Will we promulgate our own beliefs, our own ideas, or our own philosophies? You know, we have an open door policy. And again, I've made the statement that for in Spokane, I already know there are going to be others from other fellowships that will join us. We have an open door policy. We have that here locally in our congregations in the Northwest. We welcome anyone that sincerely desires to worship with us. No problem with that. But if an individual has a different idea, is a different philosophy, a different belief, we let them know you need to leave that outside before you enter in. I'm reminded of the story of a feast coordinator years ago at a feast site. And there was a group of people that had come to this particular feast. And they were there after services, and the feast coordinator could tell they had their Bibles out, and they were talking to some people, and they were pointing to, you know, this, that, and the other thing. They were preaching the word. So this coordinator went to the individuals, and, you know, what was going on? Well, they don't believe in three resurrections, and they're trying to show us that we're wrong in our beliefs, and there's only two resurrections. So the feast coordinator went to the individuals the next day and said, look, I know that you're not part of our fellowship. You're welcome to be here. But those are not ideas that we promote within our fellowship. You need to respect our beliefs and what we teach in this organization. Oh, okay. That day after services, he looks and they're in the distance. There they are. He starts to make his way over. They catch him in the corner right, and they shut the Bibles and they're walking out as fast as they could. My point being here is, as we come into wherever we're going, we must be careful not to promulgate our own beliefs, ideas. If we have some of those, we need to leave them alone. We need to leave them alone. Hopefully we don't have any of them. But if we do, we need to keep them away and understand and realize that we need to come together in unity during this Feast of Tabernacles, all as one. I want you to notice the scripture in this regard. Romans chapter 14. Our conduct, our conversation, what will it be like? Will it be something that will be very positive? And again, I simply say this as a reminder to everybody. I don't think for a moment that any of you here or anybody up in Seattle or over in Spokane are just suddenly going to go out and cause problems at the feast site that you're at. I don't believe that. But I want us to be reminded of the importance of what we're going to be leaving at the feast, wherever we go, the importance of where we're going. Romans chapter 14, notice in verse 19, he's making a statement here about not being a stumbling block. He's talking about things that people would eat. Some would eat these things, some would not eat these things, some would, you know, get caught up in certain things, and you become a stumbling block to another member of the body. And he makes an interesting statement here in verse 19, Romans chapter 14, verse 19. He says, therefore, let us pursue the things which make for peace and the things by which one may edify one another or another. There are things in our control, right? And there are things out of our control. We have control of what we say. We may not have control of what somebody else says. We have control for ourselves and what we say and what we do. Therefore, I encourage us all to pursue the things that make for peace at the Feast of Tabernacles this year. These all point to our interaction with one another. We want them, when they go back, wherever they might be from around the United States, wherever we might be going for the feast, and we're going to come in contact with people we've never met before. And one of two things is going to happen after we've interacted with those people that we've never met before. They're going to say, those are some of the nicest brethren we have in the Pacific Northwest. Or they're going to say, those are some of the weirdest people we've ever met in the Pacific Northwest. I hope it's the former. I hope it's the former. So again, we have an understanding. The statement is made, and I think you've heard it before, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, right? We are going to make a first impression with a number of people at this Feast of Tabernacles. Make it a good one. Make it a lasting one. Let's look at this second area that we want to look at in terms of, again, leaving an impression. And that is of service. Now, again, I realize that for those of you going to Spokane, many of you have signed up for multiple things at the feast. I've got people working overtime doing multiple things. I think Mr. McNeil feels he's probably on the payroll right now that I'm paying, but all the work that he's going to be doing, I'll let him win at golf. That'll be his reward. I shouldn't say that. One day he will beat me and then he'll say, oh, okay. Let's understand something when it comes to the Feast of Tabernacles. We're not going on vacation. We're not going to a business conference filled with lectures every day. We are going to the Feast of Tabernacles. When you go to a vacation or you go to a business conference, you are a consumer. You go on vacation somewhere and you're consuming, whether you're at a hotel, whether you're at a resort, the restaurants that you go to, what the activities, the attractions you might go to, you are a consumer. If you go to a business conference and you're listening to lectures, you are a consumer in terms of those lectures. You're not serving the business conference. You're not serving the resort. You're taking from them. We don't want to go to the feast and be a feast consumer. Now, what do I mean by that? We don't want to go to the feast and take and never give. That's a consumer. We don't want to be a consumer. We want to be able to give. We'll be at the Feast of Tabernacles for this 7 days, picturing a time of true peace, of true joy on this earth. These are important, righteous characteristics that we are learning now. We are practicing them now. And they are important traits. But I would also remind all of us that we are also learning to be godly servants now. And by serving now, we are learning how to be godly servants now. So therefore, when we go to the feast, we don't want to be a church consumer. We don't want to be a feast consumer. Notice over in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. Paul's making a statement here to Timothy, which I believe sort of sums up this whole understanding of leaving an impression for those in the church. He's speaking specifically about those in the church. He wasn't speaking to Timothy to be that light to people outside the church. Here's a statement he's going to make that dealing with people in the church. 1 Timothy chapter 4, and notice verse 12. He says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers," those inside the body, "be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity." You know, over my time in the feast, or my time in the church, and my time at the Feast of Tabernacles through the years, which 58 will be this 58th Feast of Tabernacles for me. I don't remember the first, second, third, or fourth, maybe not even the fifth. It gets really fuzzy, but anyways, you get the point. But there are certain things that happen at the feast that I can go back to and I can take a look at and I'm reminded of. And under this area of service at the church or service at the feast, I'm reminded of a story, and I can't remember if it was 2007 or 2008. It was at Steamboat Springs, Colorado. We were meeting at the Grand. It's a beautiful resort there in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Some of you may have been there. And the ballroom that we would have services in every day, on one particular evening, we would have a family dance. And so it would require all of the staff of the Grand to come in, and they would pack up all the chairs. They would move them off to the side of the hall. They would set down a dance floor, and it would be transformed into this dance area where we'd have a dance for several hours. And then, of course, once the dance was over, everything had to be put back for services the next morning. So we would normally ask for individuals to help out, volunteers that could help the employees of the Grand sort of put back things together. Because normally, again, from the Church of God, we have a certain way that we like our chairs. We like them set up a specific way at the feast. And so we make certain sure that we're there when things are being set up because we say, okay, this is the way we want it set up. So this particular Feast of Tabernacles, again, we made the announcement, and we had several volunteers, and people were there, and they were grabbing chairs, and they were getting them set up. And I'm reminded of this particular young lady. I don't know how old she might have been. She's in her 20s or 30s. She was a quadriplegic. She was in a wheelchair. She had no use of her legs. She basically could only maneuver her electric wheelchair with a toggle switch on with the one hand. And these chairs were set up about 7, 8, or 9 seats high. And the carpet was very, very thin. It was probably a lower pile than what we have on the floor here. And she would put that set of chairs about 7 or 8 high. And she'd put her electric wheelchair right at the front on it. And she would push that stack of chairs to the center where they were setting up chairs, go back, get another stack of chairs, and push it to where they needed to set up chairs. And I thought to myself at that particular moment, it's stuck in my mind now for what, 12, 13 years later. And I thought, what a fantastic example of word and deed in terms of the feast and service to the church. You know, here's an individual who could simply say, there's no way I can set up chairs. I can't. I'm in a wheelchair. But in spite of her physical problems that she had, her limitations that she had, she found a way to serve at the church. It left an impression on me, as you can tell, some 12 years later. I'm still reminded. I can visualize it. I can see it. My point is, that's the impression that we want to leave on others within the church. We want to leave something for them. We want it to be a positive example, that everyone that comes in contact with us will see a very positive impression after they leave the church, after they leave the feast this year. Brethren, wherever we are headed for this Feast of Tabernacles, let us resolve to leave something there. Let us resolve to be Christ-like to those that are outside the church, that they may see our lights shine and show the glory of God. But let's also resolve to be an example to the believers, an example to the believers in word and in deed. Let us leave a good impression for all that we meet at this Feast of Tabernacles.